Hey everyone, and welcome to Free Agency with Scouting the League. A lot of money being spent out there. Some I would argue is a little bit of stupid money, but every team, GM, head coach, and sometimes owner is pushing the buttons to try to get their team to the Super Bowl. Regardless of what you think, each team is going to feel pretty good about their own signings. Like or dislike yours, let us know. Either way, free agency is a beast and gets even more beastly when you start talking guaranteed money, incentives, signing bonuses, team options, trade clauses, so much more goes into it. So today we have an expert to talk us through it. Before we jump in there, let me remind you, like, subscribe, share this podcast wherever you are listening. Give us a five-star review, and most importantly, share it with everybody you know out there. We love hearing from you, what you agree with, probably more often what you disagree with. And as always, Neil Stratton of Inside the League is on with me. You can find Neil on X at Inside the League. I am Roderick David at Right Step ADV on X. Today's guest, someone I'm lucky to call not only a colleague, but a friend, Nick Polk. Nick spent nearly 20 years with the Atlanta Falcons as their director of football operations, handling all things salary cap, plus a little bit of everything else. Contracts with numerous players over the years, including multiple Matt Ryan deals, Julio Jones, Jake Matthews, so many more. We will get into those a little bit later. Among the other things he has done, he has served as the senior director of football operations for the NFL, oversaw much of what happened with NFL Europe, has coached, has scouted at different points in his career. Nick is a mentor at Sport Management Worldwide and now works with Athletes First. He has a fantastic resume, but again, a good person in football, as good as they come. Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Roderick. I appreciate it. And how are you doing, Neil?
Doing great, man. We're sure glad to have you, especially this time of year when I guess we're in day three of free agency at this point.
Yeah, day three. Time. Yeah, money's been flying around. Nick, again, that's a long resume. What are you currently doing now? Again, Athletes First. Again, primarily working with coaches. Just touch on that a little bit, what you're doing now.
Well, Athletes First has a couple different divisions, obviously very big on the player side, but the division that I work for is headed up by Trace Armstrong, and it's a coaching division. So we help advise and negotiate contracts for NFL coaches as well as college coaches. We also work with front office personnel, so it could be, you know, directors of college scouting, directors of pro scouting, assistant GMs, you know, head coaches. We try and do a good job of advising them, you know, from a contractual standpoint, but also we spend time helping them put together, you know, a plan and an off-season plan for development.
Perfect. A plan for their team, a plan for development individually. Again, that's what we're seeing with free agency, right? The beginning of the 2024 season plan for all these NFL teams. Again, every team is sitting there looking their board. Again, some teams do a better job sticking to their boards. Some teams, it almost, you get a sense of panic sometimes. Again, every team's going to trust their board. We've seen lots and lots of money being agreed to over the last few days. Of course, the salary jumped up about $30 million this year. Again, just jumping right into the salary cap, what does the average person out there, and even maybe newer agents, scouts that are listening, what would you tell them that they really need to know about the salary cap?
Well, I mean, the salary cap is different than any other league in the NFL. And the thing that's unique about it is it was created with the idea to keep competitive balance between markets, and you had small market teams and larger market teams. And, you know, you wanted to have a situation where whether you were in Green Bay or you were in New York City with a franchise, that you had an opportunity to have some type of regulator that was going to create competitive balance. And I think that, you know, for the most part, you can be very creative with the salary cap. So there's a lot of ways to manipulate it, if you want to call it that. But I think the biggest difference between the NFL salary cap and other leagues is it is a hard cap, meaning that every dollar spent is going to be accounted for, whether it's accounted for right now in this year, or whether it's prorated out into the future, or whether it's a situation where there's acceleration that takes place of dollars that are out there in the future. You do have to manage that. And I would say this to both of you. You started off by saying, free agency is upon us and all the things that are going on. I think one of the things that's really interesting is clubs are planning strategically, 2 and 3 and 4 years out in terms of what they're looking at. And I think what's interesting for the average fan is they think, oh, it gets to free agency and, there's not a plan, or there's not a, it just seems like they're not doing anything. Well, sometimes that's part of the plan. the activity and what you're going to have. The first thing you have to determine is, what do you believe in building your roster, right? And as a general manager and a head coach and an owner, each team is different in how they believe they can build a roster to become a championship, Super Bowl contender. And, part of that obviously is how do you utilize free agency? You'll see that some teams are very active in free agency and some teams are a little bit more cautious and wait till, and we can probably talk about it in a little bit, but there's different waves of free agency.
Right.
The first wave is upon us right now. But there just are different philosophies, and I've talked to a bunch of different teams about the different ways that people look at it. And I think the thing to remember is there's always some really deep thought that goes into how you're going to fill team needs, right? And you talk all the time about what is the cost of replacement of a player. So if you have player X that is going to become a free agent, you do an evaluation and a study of what you think the market's going to be for that particular player to retain him. And then you have to look at, all right, if I'm going to replace him, how do I get him in the free agent market or out on the street with a street free agent? Or what draft capital do I have to use to try and replace him? So, I think there's just a lot of planning that goes into place, and it starts, especially in free agency, you start a plan a year earlier, and then, when you get to December, you're fine-tuning, things that are based on injury or, other transactions that have happened. And then you start to see your draft, potential draft class that's up there. And you're putting all those things together, and there's lots and lots of meetings and discussions.
Yeah, it is. Again, the beast that it is. Again, that's just the that from a number standpoint. But again, you brought up again everything that happens in a building. That's the patience. Perhaps the hardest thing for the average fan out there to realize is, hey, patience, and there's a plan. Again, there's people working round the clock. Putting these plans together, evaluating players, having a scope of the entire free agent class. Again, going into the and then adding that to the NFL draft, not only this year, what's going to be in the 2024 draft, but what is it going to look like in 2025 as well, right? Again, that's going to shape your draft boards and your free agency boards as well as, hey, we may have to live with something this year because we can't pay. We don't want to value it that way. But again, it all comes into it. Over the years, and again, this year we're seeing a big jump up, nearly 30 million in the salary cap. The salary cap for the NFL has continued to grow. Again, the most popular league in all of professional sports. People love it. People can't get enough of it. The growth of the salary cap obviously has been good. It's put more money in the pockets of, teams, owners, coaches, everybody. But how has it changed negotiations, or has it changed negotiations? And what has that growth of the salary cap really meant to the NFL?
Well, obviously the growth of the salary cap means health for the league, right? It's a healthy league in the sense that people want to be associated with it from a sponsor standpoint. People want to buy tickets. People want to be involved. I mean, just as you're watching on TV today and all this week, more people watch some of the stuff on free agent than some regular season games and in other sports. And as you had mentioned, it has become a year-round calendar year of events that are going on. I can remember when John Beek and I went to Indianapolis to talk to Duke Babb about The NFL Network is going to broadcast, you know, the game, you know, the combine. And it was like, holy mackerel, how can that happen? This is kind of a sacred thing that we're doing. And look at what's happened just over the years with the combine and the interest that fans have in the game. When I started in 2004, in my first 2 years, 2004, 2005, I was much more involved with. As you know, Roderick, we had another project that was going on, the Arena Football Team, and I was the GM of that team. But in 2004, the salary cap was around $80,500,000, right? So you look at it and you see how it's grown over the years to where this year it's 250 some million dollars. I mean, that's a dramatic growth over that period of time. And you look at it, and the average growth is close to, at least in the last 10 years, the average growth has been close to, you know, 8 to 10%. The only year that was kind of a little bit of an anomaly was in 2021. I think it dropped about 8%. And, you know, as you, and this goes back to that strategic plan stuff, as you plan strategically, you plan for your contracts and for every move that you're going to make. For a certain amount of growth in your deals, right? And you will see that, you know, some teams take the philosophy of very flat deals that the cap hit's going to be equal across the board. You'll see some teams that, you know, you still have teams like Pittsburgh and Cincinnati that, you know, don't, and Green Bay in a lot of ways that don't do guaranteed money past the first year or past the second year. You'll have some that, you know, Tampa's done it two ways, right? There was a time period where Tampa would manage the cap by basically it was a pay-to-play type situation where they were guaranteeing it by year, but they weren't giving big signing bonuses, so they didn't have a lot of prorated dollars out there. So, you know, the advantage to that is it's very easy to make moves and be flexible. Now, when Tom Brady came, obviously that changed things a little bit in how they had to do and manage, but every team is really different in their philosophy of managing the cap. And as you look at it, your question was, you know, how's the growth of the cap affected negotiations? I would say this: the market is the market. You spend, you know, you spend most of your time as a football administration person, you know, you've got to understand the market for each position and what is the value that you know, the value range that a player could ask for, whether it's re-signing one of your own or whether it's in free agency. And when you really look at it, I don't know that the size of the salary cap has changed it dramatically because it's positional value. And sometimes the positional value has changed based on different schemes and how people value players at you know, certain positions. Like when I first started, you know, there was probably a little, you know, there may have been a little more value on running backs than there are today, right? In terms of the market. And then you look at safeties, you know, in some schemes now, safeties are being paid more than they were 10 or 12 years ago. One of the things that we used to talk about, and Rod, I'm sure you heard me talk about this in a meeting, is, you know, you have to build your team and your roster based on what is important to the coaching staff,
Yeah,
right?
absolutely.
And the coaching staff has to be able to be clear and concise in what they need. And then the general manager sets the guide on, okay, this is how we're going to attack building this roster. And so there's, you know, there's a lot of co-team building that takes place there. And, you know, but part of it is you have to understand what are the most important positions in your scheme, right? And if you know, if the general manager doesn't have a really good feel for what is important to that coach in terms of how he has a, you know, a vision, you know, we used to talk all the time about creating a word picture. So be able to put it down in one-liners or whatever, what it is that you're trying to describe and what are the critical factors that are going to be part of that. And then it's the scout's responsibility, right, to go out and then find those types of players. Well, then on the football admin side, it's our job then to figure out how do we fit them in the roster and You know, if you were to put the numbers 1 to 11 up on a whiteboard and say, you know, and this is a very rudimentary way to explain it, but put 1 to 11 up on the board and say, hey, what's the most important position down to the least important position on the offense and on the defense? And, you know, at least then you know, okay, if I'm paying all these guys that are down at the bottom of his rankings of what's important, then we better damn well have really good rookie players that are up in the top, because you also have to plan for that, right? You have to plan for the cycle of, let's say you have a rookie quarterback and you have, you know, a really good rookie wide receiver, and, you know, you may be able to spend some more money in another position, right, that you can't spend, that you don't need to spend at those positions. But you know, eventually in 3 years, you're going to have to pay those guys, and you're going to have to find a way to have a low level player, a lower level player at the other position. So, you know, strategically, it is not just a, you know, a 3 month vision. It really is a plan. Now, on the flip side of that, with what's going on with, it used to be, you know, you could have 4 years to build a roster and 4 years to be able to make the moves that you need to. Now it's really down to two, you know, where you have less time to do it. So there's more decisions that need to be made quickly in order to turn your roster around. And I think that, you know, that's part of it. The other part of it is GMs have to have the long-term vision of the organization in mind. Owners obviously are counting on the general manager and all the people on the front office side to be able to have that vision and understand that, you know, we don't want to make rash decisions that are going to, you know, affect our roster down the road. Now, sometimes, you know, you decide you're pushing all the chips in the middle of the table and you, and you go for it. You know, and that paid off, you know, and I wouldn't say the Rams did that, but the Rams made some moves and did some things that it paid off for them. I think the other thing that I wanted to talk about here is it's really interesting to evaluate the effectiveness of free agency, not just from a salary cap standpoint, but, you know, philosophically, what is the hit rate on success? And how do you define success? Because some of these guys get paid, you know, you can have a market, right? And that market might say that it's $10 million, right? But all it takes is two teams to value that guy and get into a little bit of a bidding war, if you want to call it that, for the player services. And then all of a sudden the market really doesn't matter, right? Where it does matter is internally, when you set your floor and you set your ceiling for what you're willing to pay for that player, then it's up to you then to turn the page and go to option B, as opposed to overpay option A. Now, what happens sometimes is, as you said, the emotion of things gets involved with how important it is to fill that need. That, you know, it is a very, you know, the first week of free agency is very, very active. And there's a lot of, because the other part of it is, you know, I think sometimes people think you're negotiating with one, you know, you've got this negotiating period going on now, and you're negotiating with just one agent. Well, you're not, because you don't know that you're getting that guy.
Right.
So you probably have, between your coaches and the pro scouting department and your player personnel director and your GM, you know, you have a stack list of, here are the three guys we'd be interested in. And you've got to kind of have a market for each of those three guys. Or maybe you just say, if we don't get this guy, we're going to step back and we're going to reevaluate and we're going to move on to a different acquisition model. But, you know, going back to your question, it's, the market is dictated by studying the market. What are the contracts that are done? And there is a difference between, you know, a free agent contract versus an extension of an unrestricted, or, you know, someone who's on your roster that may have a year or 2 years left. versus a rookie deal. So there's, you know, really different types of contracts. But I look at it as, I think that back when they changed the, and I know we're going to talk about this later, but changed to more of a rookie scale type system on the rookies, that the hope was that there'd be a better middle class of players in the middle of your roster that made more money, and that there would be more money that would go from the rookies to veterans. I'm not so sure that that really happened. You know, I think the upper tier of players are still getting paid a lot of money. The good thing is that those players are now getting that money instead of a rookie. I always use the example when, and Matt Ryan, I think, had a 6-year, $66 million contract as a rookie, and he was the third pick in the draft, could get to up to $72 million over the life of the deal. You know, veterans were like, hey, is that really fair? You know, that this guy that hasn't played a snap yet is going to make that. Now, obviously, it was a great decision in terms of the player for Atlanta, and he had a great career. But then if you look at it a year or two later, I don't remember, I think it was maybe 2 years after that, but the same position wound up getting, you know, around $22 million. And so the money was then just reallocated to be available for, you know, re-signing your own or free agents. And when you look at it, it is really about filling need. Free agency is also about what the team's philosophy is. Because you, as you're watching this unfold here this week, there's a lot of teams that aren't doing anything, right? And there's some that are very, very active. And as we're in phase one here, that really is the most difficult time for the team from a negotiation standpoint, because, you know, from an agent standpoint, the agent wants to get the maximum deal he can for his client.
Right.
And, you know, that's important for us and at Athletes First. But you also know on the club side that you're going a little bit blind on the first 4 or 5 days, because you really, there's no way to know whether there's another deal out there or not. And, you know, it's probably one of the tougher negotiations that you have to do from a club standpoint. But I don't know that, I mean, the cap rising certainly has taken the numbers to large numbers. But when you look at, like, from a percentage of how much of the cap is used at each position and stuff like that, you know, it'd be interesting to go back, and I haven't done this, where you go back to 2004 and see what percentage was used for running backs and O-line and guards and centers, and you know, versus Matt Ryan, or I'm sorry, I was gonna, it's Matt Ryan's rookie deal took up 16 point whatever percent of the cap, and his next extension took like 17%, right? So the really good part of that whole thing was, before the rookie system, it was kind of a balance, right? And, you know, now with the new system in, and it's not new anymore, it's been there for quite a while.
It feels old now.
You know, you're looking at, you really have to plan for that next extension, because the amount of money is going to be much more, take a bigger chunk of your cap. And you know, I think that there are some teams that have the philosophy to draft, re-sign their own, and just supplement through free agency. There are some that feel that they need to use free agency in a big way. There are also teams that, you know, the other thing we haven't talked about is the effect of trades and acquiring players that are established in the league, and paying them that money or taking up more cap room for those type players that are more established, as opposed to taking a risk on you know, a rookie or a UFA. I can't remember, one of the conversations I had when I was in the league office, we were in a meeting, and George Young and Commissioner Tagliabue were there, and, you know, we were just having a free agency discussion. And, you know, the commissioner had even said at one point, you know, if you really wanted to keep the guy on your team, in most cases, you can find a creative way to do it, right? So, it's kind of like that buyer beware in some situations. Now, that's not fair for every one of them, because there are some situations where, you just have a certain number of players that are all coming up at the same time, and you can't keep them all, and that happens. But it is interesting to look at how teams' philosophy on building a roster and their use of free agency and how to take advantage of it.
One of the interesting things, again, a team like the Houston Texans, who it looks like absolutely hit on two draft picks last year, two first rounders. Again, you could easily make the argument their long-term philosophy may have changed, and they may be in more of a buyer's mode now because they got, again, a premier edge and a premier quarterback on rookie contracts. So, hey, maybe jump in here now, sign some guys. Let's go for it over the next 2 or 3 years before we have to pay Anderson and CJ. And so, again, that the plans are made, the plans can change. The plans can really change when you maybe sign or trade a guy and sign a guy to that big extension. Neil, I know you had a question about the Broncos.
Nick, let's talk about some real-world applications here. I think one of the most underplayed stories of the offseason, and I guess maybe the end of last season, is the divorce between Russell Wilson and the Broncos. When that kind of marriage was coming to its end, and it looked like and it became pretty clear toward the end of the season this was coming, how would you counsel Sean Payton on, look, this is how this is going to affect our pro staff. This is how it's going to affect our college staff. This is kind of how it's going to affect our coaching staff, because it does have such ramifications when you eat that much cap over a 2-year period. I mean, how would you put your Broncos hat on for a minute? Tell us kind of what conversations were taking place in the front office of the Broncos over the last maybe couple months.
I mean, the first part of it is they're going to evaluate him as a player and see if they think that he is going to fit into their system, and whether Sean felt he could fit in. It's really difficult for me to sit here and say what conversations would take place at any front office, because I can only speak on behalf of my experiences, and I'm not in their front office. But the effect of it, let's just say generally, the effect of those types of moves where you have a large amount of space that could be eaten up is, what's the effect of keeping the player, and how does that affect your roster? And if he's really not going to be a part of your plan, there's a lot of other things that come into it. So when they made the decision to move on from him, then you look at the mechanics of, there are post-June 1 designations, and then there's pre-June 1 designations. And for those out there that don't know what that is the clubs have a couple of opportunities to designate a player as a post-June 1 designation. And what that would mean is that the cap number that they had for this year coming into 2024 would remain the same, and the acceleration wouldn't occur until the following year in 2025. Now, I would think that because of the amount of cap growth this year, and it being such a tremendous amount of $30 million plus dollars, that the other option then is to make the move, take the hit this year equal to the hit, the next year. And again, we'll find out here in the next couple days, I guess, exactly what they wound up doing, because I don't think anybody knows for sure which way they went yet until the league year starts. But you're looking at, in any of those situations, what is the amount of money that is being tied up in dead money? All right. So that's really what the discussion is what is the dead money that is going to be sitting on your cap, and how does that affect your roster and how you can allocate dollars to other positions? Now, you would think that there's a chance that to this point anyway, they haven't gone out and acquired a high dollar guy. So you're thinking that the replacement potentially could be a draft pick or a lower level guy. So that's going to help you in that situation. And sometimes it's better to, for lack of a better term, take your medicine now and make the adjustment and move on and build from there than it is to keep prolonging it and, doing it a year from now. And, every club has those situations, not maybe as drastic. The other part that happens where people get affected, and it happened to us in Atlanta in some way, is that when you rework deals to create space for other moves, you are now creating more money out there that's going to eventually be dead money, right? And they wound up having a very large cap number that was dead for Matt Ryan as well because of some of the restructures that were done. So all those things definitely get discussed in how you're going to replace that player, as well as how it affects your roster and how you're able to acquire players. And those discussions, I'm sure, across the league, no matter what team you're on, are not taken lightly. There's a lot of different scenarios that are built. You look at all the different options that are available to you as a club, and you try and make the best decision that you can based on, once you decide you're going to move on from a player and it's going to create dead money. Now the next thing is okay, we've got a plan. Here's how we have to implement it. And then you do have to sit down and take time on the salary cap management part and say, all right, this is the if you break it into levels or tiers or whatever it is, we can't afford right now this year a level one, but when we get in the second wave of free agency, we can get some value and we may be able to get a player that can have really important snaps for us during the season. And the funny part is that if you really do your study of the success, there's so much put on these guys that get paid a premium in the early part of free agency that it's hard for them to live up to the value that they got paid, because there's only let's say there's 20 or 25 of the guys that really get top tier contracts. How do you define success,
Right.
right? Because the more money you pay them, the more you expect as a fan or as a club or anything like that. And they may play at the level that they've been playing at, but it's not good enough because, you went out and spent all this money on them. Conversely,
Expectations matter.
and there are expectations all the time. And then you look at, if you sit back and you look at the second tier free agency, and sometimes there's not as much expectation for that guy, and then all of a sudden he becomes a really big contributor. And, from a value to cost proposition, sometimes those players become better for the club. Now, that's not to say that, there aren't some really, really good free agents that have big, big impacts on our team or on any team. And, I know we're going to get into it later, but, when you look at our years, we signed a bunch of different free agents throughout the year in Atlanta. I don't know that any was more impactful than Michael Turner. When Mike Smith became the head coach and Thomas became the GM, and there was a real concerted effort of, hey, we know we're going to have a rookie quarterback. You were coming off of, all the Michael Vick stuff, and then the next year of trying to have all the musical chairs at quarterback. But the one thing that Thomas and Mike Smith and Rich McKay and everybody really believed is that you've got to protect that young quarterback and you got to have a great running game. And so, the scouts did a great job of evaluating. And, a lot of people were like, ah, Michael Turner, he wasn't even a starter at the Chargers at the time. He had, production, but he didn't have as many miles on the tread, if you would. And he came in and really played a great role. And, at that time it was a really big contract. He had 6 years. I think it was $34.5 million. He was almost $6 million average per year. And he came in and I would say exceeded expectations on that. And you have probably again, I think there's a perfect example of fitting all the things, and you're talking about the strategic part of putting a team together, that the GM and the head coach really have to be on the same page in where they're going to spend money, and how they're going to spend money.
Yeah. Again, with everything that you've talked about, with everything we've talked about both sides, right? Scouting and coaching, front office. Again, everybody's got to be on the same page for this, for all of it. Draft, for the draft, for free agency, for building your team, in-season acquisitions, all of it has to be on the same page. Again, some organizations, they're on the same page and then they get real creative. Again, there's a team in the NFC South, I believe it's Neil's team, maybe as creative as anybody. Again, Neil, creative with the salary cap is what I would call the New Orleans Saints. And, what are your thoughts on that, Neil? And I think you had a question
Well,
there.
the question I wanted to ask, Nick, you mentioned kind of at the outset some of the teams are maybe a bit more conservative, a bit more year to year on how they spend their money. The Saints are kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, whereas they get out the credit card pretty much every year. As a, having that team in your division, did you see that as a competitive advantage because they were always so pressed? Or did you see it as, hey, we admire the things that they do and, is makes it maybe a little tougher for us because they do things well. I mean, was it either end of the scale as far as how you thought about their strategy?
It's interesting because one of the things you do is you kind of look at how do different teams across the league do it and why do they do it. And, I think the study will tell you that there's no one way to manage the cap and do it to win a Super Bowl. There's a lot of different ways that teams have had success. If you look at Kansas City, they've had success. Now, I don't know if this is the time to get into this, but this really does marry to this concept of everybody is so concerned about the salary cap, but really, I learned a long time ago, our CFO, in the very first meeting I ever met him, wrote on the board, cash is king, right? Cash plays a big part in terms of how you can manage the cap. And are you a cash to cap team? Are you a below, the cap cash team? Or are you over cash, over cap? And, teams that, eventually every dollar counts. So you eventually have to level things out. But what I would say is if you look at the teams like New Orleans, and there's a few of those teams that have restructured a lot of deals and have kind of lived on that type of philosophy, they know what they're doing and they, they buy into that belief. But if you look at it, the one thing I always ask the question is what is the constant for the teams that have that philosophy? And it's stability within the front office, right? In Pittsburgh, they do more of it. In Philly, they do more of it. In New Orleans, and you look at the leadership within those organizations, and it hasn't been where they've changed after 3 years and gotten rid of a GM. When you buy into as an owner that, now I would say this, any team that uses that philosophy, if one day, either the general manager retired or the owner decides to make a change, you either have to live with that philosophy as the new regime, or you have to bite the bullet and change it back to, a different system. I go back to it as, if you really look at the philosophies of roster construction as it pertains to salary cap, I talked about Kansas City having one philosophy. We talked about the Saints. You look at the Rams and how they've done things where they may not be spending as much money in free agency, but they did spend on veteran players through acquisition. But the Rams did a phenomenal job of hitting on fourth through seventh round picks or third through seventh round picks. And I think I saw one study that showed the amount of play time that those guys have had over the last few years. And, it's as Roderick said, it is such a Rubik's Cube of communication is so important. strategic philosophy is important, everyone being on the same page, and where they're where there are issues, it's usually because there's some kind of a struggle between what is believed to be right versus not right on the coaching or front office side. And if you're not on the same page, then it can, create issues. But going back to the cash thing is every club has a cash budget, right? We all know what the salary cap is, and this year it's 255 million. Now, not every team has 255 million to spend in this year, right? Some may have 240, some may have 275 or 300. And you ask, what does that really affect? Well, it affects how you can structure deals, right? So how you put a contract together, whether it's with signing bonus, whether it's with guaranteed paragraph five, whether it's with roster bonuses, they all have certain payments that need to be made. And, the teams that don't do the guarantee of future years tend to, pay a large sum of money upfront in a signing bonus in some way, right? So if you have a couple of those deals, that can eat up a large chunk of your cash budget, right? Where some teams have cash deferrals, where, if you have a $20 million signing bonus, maybe you get 10 million of it at the time of signing, and you get 10 million of it the following March, a year later. The other, and there's so many, you can get in the weeds on things, but there is a mechanism called funding, right? That if you look at the history of the NFL, there was a time when if you had a measurement date in December, the end of December, to look at all the guaranteed money that you have on your contracts. And then there's a funding date of January 31st. And if you had guarantee that went past that, you had to fund it and put it in escrow up at the league office. And that's still in place today, right? But the reason that that was there was because at the beginning and start of the league, there were teams that might fold. And then there'd be these guaranteed dollars out there, and they wanted to make sure that the players could be paid. So they put it over in funding, right? And it went to the league and it went in escrow. And then you got the money. Once you made the payment, you got the money back. Well, now I want to say there used to be $1 million. I think it's $3 million that you don't have to fund, but then everything else you do. But there's mechanisms to avoid funding as well. And you can guarantee something for injury. So let's go back and define what a full guarantee is, right? If you're doing a contract and you hear the term on television and you hear, well, it's a fully guaranteed, the first 3 years are fully guaranteed. Well, what that should mean is it's guaranteed for skill, injury, and salary cap. There's three components. Now, if you guarantee at the time of signing all three of those years, two of those years are going to have to be funded, meaning the owner has to write a check, send it to the bank up at the league office, and it goes into escrow above the $3 million. If you guarantee the first year and then guarantee the second and third year for injury only, you can have what's considered a rolling guarantee, which measurement date's December 31st. You create some mechanism that rolls it, right, till let's say the start of the league year. And then at March 31st, which is the measurement date, if that guarantee wasn't there at the measurement or at the measurement date of December 31st, you don't have to fund it. So it's a mechanism for cash flow from the owner. Either you're paying it up to the league in funding or you're not. So, you hear partial guarantees, injury-only guarantees, full guarantees. So there's many different mechanisms that all have an effect, and they all have a different salary cap accounting deal where A signing bonus can be prorated over 5 years. You have option bonuses, you have roster bonuses, and there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes in the structure of a contract.
Yeah, and that's as we talk about first wave of free agency, again, a lot of real sexy numbers being thrown up there. Again, some of them are real. Some of them, again, you start talking about some of those. What is that guarantee really for? How much of it's actually guaranteed? Real big, pretty total dollar number. Again, only 1 year's guaranteed. That means that guy could be on the street again in a year. So again, it's one of those things where a lot of people, some of the good analysts out there was, hey, let's wait and see what the numbers actually come back on this contract before we evaluate again what it's doing to this team. Again, we could spend another hour again going over the intricacies, again, cap versus cash, the nuances, the different ways you can do things. Nick, is there a deal that you remember that's like, man, that was just, it was a really fun one? Again, whatever fun means to somebody that, creates contracts and salary cap situations, or a situation that you remember from all the deals you did that you think back on when you think of some of the contracts you've done over the years?
Free agency is always the most stressful ones because you feel like you're negotiating in a little bit of a vacuum, right? For the most part, I would say 95% of the agents are great to deal with, and you build relationships. And the one thing people don't realize is it is a relationship business. So you want to make sure that, they're looking at what you've done historically, and we're keeping track of what they've done on the agent side. And now that I'm on the agent side, I know that people track that stuff, and they're looking at what's important to you. What have you done? What have you not done? look, some of the, I got to say, and probably not just because it was the biggest deals, but, being able to work through quarterback deals are always challenging, but yet they're fun because they challenge you to really look at all the different aspects of, Thomas or Rich McKay and whether it's Mike Smith, Dan Quinn, any of the coaches that we've worked with. You really have to put all the pieces of the puzzle together and see exactly how it's going to fit. And then when you're dealing with, at that time, Tom Condon was one of the best agents, still one of the best agents in the world in terms of football stuff. And, it's just that back and forth, being respectful, but each having a position and being able to defend the position and what is important to you. And negotiation is just what it says. It's give and take. But that particular one at times could take up to a year, right, on the big deals. And I think the one thing that's important to know about negotiating is if there's not a deadline, negotiations tend to sputter, because there's no real deadline. And it sometimes can be a self-imposed deadline by the club or by the agent, right? But like in free agency, the deadline on our side for the agents right now is, by 4 o'clock today, you want to make sure that your top guys, or by 4 o'clock tomorrow or whenever, and get those deals done, because on the free agent side, the longer it goes, the leverage switches back, from the player back to the club. But I would say the fun part of doing any of the big deals are the preparation, that communication within the building, the ability to sit down and look at, okay, here's a possible first offer all the way up to what you think the final offer would be, what you hope it'll be structure-wise, how it'll look over a 5 or 6 year period in terms of fitting into the roster. So those kind of deals are fun. And in one of the Matt Ryan deals that we wound up doing, there was a deadline because the CBA had been reduced by 2 years. And at that time, it was going to change the length of the deal. And we wanted to be able to do a 6 year deal at that time. And Matt did as well, I think, in his representation. And it took us 72 straight hours right before the deadline, where you were scrambling, and we were right up against getting the ECRS in to the league in time for it not to be disapproved. And then some of the more challenging contracts are the smaller contracts, because as agents we want to make sure that we're getting value, all of it. And so you're fighting over smaller dollars, but they're important dollars to the player. But I would say, those, whether it was a lot of the big contracts that we've done, but there's some that are the smaller ones. It's that relationship and continuing to build it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's I mean, that's fun. Again, you've signed some again, groundbreaking at the time. Again, you think about some of the early Matt Ryan deals. Matt Ryan was kind of on the front edge of that, the quarterback market reset, if you want to call that, where again he was pressing the threshold of contracts, and he had several players at several positions like that. And again, that we all know people in football are a little bit different. So most people don't want to work under that deadline, don't want to work under a gun. But again, the good people in football, they thrive in that. Again, just like the players thrive in that, salary cap guys, scouts, coaches, all operate under that. And man, it's a fantastic conversation, Nick. Appreciate you being on with us. I think the big thing for people to take away, hit on free agency, hit on the draft, your team's going to be pretty good, right? Again, that's always at the end of the day, the dollars you spend, the draft picks you choose to make, if you hit on them over 2, maybe 3 years, you're gonna have a pretty pretty darn good team, and you're gonna be able to take a chance to make a run in the playoffs. And Nick, you were a part of that a couple times. I was part of that. And again, for those that are out there, understand the fun that is. And so, Nick, appreciate you being on with us.
Well, I appreciate it, Roderick. And the one thing that you hit on there, it's a quarterback-driven league,
It
and
is.
you either have one or you're looking for one. And that's a big part of the success.
Quarterback purgatory. Nobody wants to be there, but again, some teams find themselves. Atlanta Falcons, think they found their guy for the next 4 years, and Kirk Cousins, Justin Fields still finding a home, Gardner Minshew on the move, and expect the top three, maybe four picks could all be quarterbacks in the draft. So, quarterback driven league. So again, hit on your picks, hit on your free agents, and you'll be just fine. And if your team is signing free agents, make sure you pay attention to the whoever's out there. Do your own film. Again, you can find Neil Stratton at Inside the League on Twitter. Nick, are you on Twitter? If people want to ask you questions, ping you questions.
I am not.
All right.
I
Well,
am
he is.
not.
He's going to just be back and answer questions for us. Then, of course, I'm at Right Step ADV. And in whatever you're doing, if you're watching football, don't just watch, but keep scouting.